It's Wednesday, March 19th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 94 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 54 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Lou.
What is wrong with you? My name is John. Don't answer that.
My name is Matt. We don't want to know.
Stop all the downloads.
Luke's the devils.
Stop all the downloads.
Alrighty. Icon. John and I are going to be at Icon in Long Island, New York.
It'll be fun. April 4th through 6th.
Yeah. So if you're up in that area, please stop by and say hi to us. Check out this convention. And it'll just be John. I actually going to be up there. My sister and my brother-in-law, but I think they're going to be touring actual New York City. Wait. So I don't know if they're going to
be. New York City?
Not Adam, right? The guy who bought you the book?
Yes.
Oh, John, now's your chance. Take this guy out.
That's right.
There's no better place in New York City.
I'm going to take my gun to New York City.
Oh, I don't think you need to take one.
To New York City, you can buy a new one.
Yeah, easily.
You bastards hid my book.
No, we didn't. We did before, but you found it.
All right, well, I'm going to find it again because I can't find it again. Yes.
I didn't do this.
The beautiful man who bought me that beautiful book with all the history and
meaning of modern cliches. For us, Luke.
Yes. Thanks. Please do.
Just remember to don't take the brass knuckles on the carry-on.
No. I'll check those in baggage.
So, John and I will be there. We're going to be doing some talking on podcasting and all that other stuff we do here.
Just bumming around, being conflict.
All I know is that you don't take, I mean, it's no wonder to me that you lost this book, because I'm looking at, you do not take very good care of your books, because you're using the Battletech 20-year update as a coaster right now.
Ooh, that's sinful.
That's bad.
Well, yeah, actually, I should take that out there. Because that's back before Battletech's plaque got all crappy. That's back when it was still good, so.
But anyway, up at Icon, we're going to meet some people. There's going to be Tuvok. There's going to be the guy who did Fry, Billy West, on Futurama. There was going to be Rutger Hauer, which was going to be awesome.
That would have been awesome.
He heard we were there, and he's like, there's no way he could follow that.
He ran out of nails to shove in his hand, so now he's dead.
I need to find my copy of Blind Fury so we can sign that stuff.
Lady Hawk all the way.
We were going to ask Rutger Hauer important questions. Like, let's say you're walking through a desert.
And you see a tortoise. But you're not helping it. Why not?
And see how he responds to that.
I've had a secret, long buried fantasy to take a Void Conf machine to Archon and start administering the Void Conf test. But I have no idea how I would construct one. And even if I did know, I probably wouldn't go to the bother. So,
or go to Archon.
Amateur.
Well, you can get e-meters off of eBay.
But I need an
those are all the property
like,
of the church.
I need an air bladder that goes up and down to no apparent.
For no reason whatsoever.
And just an optical interface thing.
Actually, it'd work nice because you could hand out buttons. Sorry, you're a robot.
Yeah.
Sorry about you being a robot.
You're not one of those higher line Nexus, are you?
Skies of Glass Tier 1 will be up in the resource documents as of the release of this episode.
Oh, you've committed now.
So check the show notes or just go to the resources section of the site if you want to download the Tier 1 rules, play them through. Let us know what you think. I mean, the point of this is a public beta of the Tier 1 rules. So if you have any comments, questions, you play this with your group and there's some area where the rules just weren't clear enough or something you really like that really worked well and you'd like to see more of, drop an email to either me or Luke and we will be sure to take all these into consideration.
Maybe I'll actually remember what I wrote in the rules and why I did it.
I didn't remember putting in a pornography section.
Dan!
Oh, I do.
But we're going to keep working on these. I would like, and I don't know if this is going to happen or not, so this is not a commitment. This is just a, you know, fantasy land sort of thing. But it'd be nice to have the Tier 2 and 3 rules ready to beta by Gen Con. But that may be pushing a little too fast.
Yeah.
But we're going to follow us up with the Tier 2 and 3 rules, at which point we're going to keep public. What we're going to do is we're going to keep releasing updates to the rules, and we'll probably mention them on the podcast as we make major updates, so you guys can keep downloading them until this reaches the point of being a final publishable product, at which case we will actually put it, get the graphic art and the internal illustration, all that stuff done. And put
actually,
this
I was kind of hoping you'd
form.
Let me do all the art for it.
Okay, that's fine. Right. If you want to just do butt prints or whatever, if you can convey evocatively the feeling of the setting through butt prints, then
they only start as butt prints.
If Cyberpunk can get away with using Barbies, I can get away with using butt prints.
Using Barbies?
Yes, the newest version of Cyberpunk, a classic game,
right?
Literally used action figures and Barbie. Like, they're not actual Barbies, but they're action figures in their pictures. It was a bold maneuver, and I think it didn't work out.
Bold move.
I don't think it worked out for
like
the best.
Action figures like all Robot right. Chicken modified.
It should be Robot Chicken. It's pretty. I mean, I hate to bash on the guys, but I've looked over the previews and I've seen somebody's copy, and I'm like, wow, this is. The rules could be great, but I don't know if I could read this without laughing for a few pages.
You know what really shocked me? There was a gaming group, five really great guys that came up to Fear the Con from Bonterra, which is, for those of you who aren't from Missouri, probably have no idea where Bonterra is. It's a small town in Missouri that's mostly known for mines that are in it. Because Missouri has like one of the largest concentrations of caves per square mile in the world. A lot of very beautiful caves.
Come see the caves. And they call it a mine.
But there's these guys that come from this little town, and they've got a really good gaming group going down there, which is great because statistically, as Ryan Dancy said, that gaming's really a suburban phenomenon. It's very unusual to find someone from an urban center or a small.
You're sitting with one, though. I mean, I break the rules.
You're sitting with a guy who now lives in the city, but is a suburban kid.
So I'm from a small town in Kansas.
I'm from a small town in Illinois. We game when I was in junior high.
Well, you're stupid.
That was never a question.
But anyway, they told me that the newest edition of Champions, they decided that the game did not have sufficient crunch and rule complexity to it. So that's what they're going to try and spruce up in the newest edition, is to add more complexity to the rules.
So they want to put more into Hero.
Yes.
That was not enough for him.
Yes.
The book that stops bullets.
Yes. The book that we linked the ballistic test for, where you can see for yourself the book stopping bullets. And
truly an epic scale project.
That's gorgeous. I've tried to flip through the Hero rules a few times, but I can't lift it.
Your arms get so tired.
They really do.
Well, Luke has little T-Rex arms.
I do. I do. I got a big head and little arms.
All right.
So we should talk about
something. So, yeah. What's really pissed me off?
What?
The new Kerrigan Zerg chick in the latest StarCraft II trailer. Not as good as old Kerrigan.
I haven't seen it.
In fact, she's really bad. It's good.
Why is she really bad?
Voice acting?
Yeah, she's. I don't feel the hatred and the passion that Glitter's talking put into Kerrigan and the elf chick.
They should get Tara Strong. She does every voice, and she does them all well.
What's she done?
She was Riku. She's Seth in Lost Odyssey. She played at least one voice part in Sacrifice. You look at Tara Strong's list.
I don't know any of these things.
I know Lost Odyssey, but I don't know what anything.
Pull up a list. She has been in like everything. I'm just scratching the bare surface of this. You name a cartoon or video game, Tara Strong has probably been in there somewhere.
Well, they need to send her to the Corporate Loose Sector in any capacity.
You could probably IMDb her. They list video game credits.
Yeah, do an IMDb. Yeah, IMDb would be a good source.
I got to be honest. I've not been following the StarCraft 2 stuff because I know my system won't run it, and I don't want to taunt myself because it's one of my favorite games.
The damn game isn't going to come out for at least a year, probably longer than that. So you might have a new
Blizzard.
System.
I'll give you time to update.
I will not be updating because there's the only reason I have to update at this point would be gaming, and that's exactly why I bought a 360 so I don't have to update anymore.
Well, Luke, you need to get your bitch ass together so you can play Conan with us.
I'll be playing on the 360 with my 360 friends. I know. I won't be playing with the rest of you guys, and I'm fine with that.
Worthless.
You heard us.
Worthless, worthless, worthless. The rest of us will be on Conan whenever that comes out on the PC. Just as
apparently in May now.
Okay, and plus, do you know my experiences with MMOs? You know, it lasts about 2.5 weeks before I quit, right? I get that before I get bored.
Okay, so we'll get you Conan and throw in a few weeks of counseling.
With people you really like? Because you have to have both.
A big group.
Yeah. You have to play with a large community.
I've played in WoW when the first Fear, well, not the first, but like one of the Fear the Boot
The
deals.
Later FTB WoW ventures didn't go anywhere.
It wasn't one of the later ones. It was before I even joined up. It was like last October. My Xbox was in for repairs because I had a launch copy and finally bricked. I decided, I'll play WoW. And I got up to about level 25 or 26 as a rogue. Soloed a little bit, but it played with a lot of Fear the Boot people. And just didn't do it for me. I don't know. I don't like the repetitiveness. Now, oddly enough, the repetitiveness of blowing stuff up in Call of Duty 4 and Halo 3 and soon Rainbow Six 2 never gets to me. I can shoot people on the same map many, many times over and still have fun.
Rainbow Six 2? I think they're a little past 2.
Rainbow Six Vegas 2.
Okay, Vegas. I was going to say, I think they're a little past 2.
Wouldn't that just be like Rainbow 7?
2 was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, it'll be out Tuesday. Well, by the time this episode drops, it'll be out and I'll be playing it.
I think I've still got the PC Gamer that had Rainbow Six demo on it.
See, I liked the original Rainbow Six when you could, like, when you actually plotted out what your NPCs could do. Now, the newer ones don't do that, but that was still really cool. That was the first time you could do it. Like, I can tell my NPCs where to go, and then they would kind of do it. That was pretty hot.
I tell my NPCs where to go all the time, but...
No, they really didn't. They didn't really follow your plan. But setting it up in, like, the 3D house, like, okay, you go to this door and wait till I hit this button to go in, and we'll time it up just right for you to get killed, and I'll have to restart the whole damn level again.
Alrighty. First topic for today. Inspired by our episode where we mocked the Dragonlance movie. Do people take gaming too seriously? This is our debate topic for today. Do people take gaming too seriously?
Dan, are you adding segments
to Fear
the Booth?
No, Dan, I'm offended that you asked.
Oh, would you like an intro song for this? You know, I saw the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, the CGI one.
Oh, yeah, I saw it when it came out the night of.
Or CG.
How was it?
I don't know why
it
I stuck
out there. There was some good 80s.
It was better than I thought it would be.
Really?
I thought it was really going to suck, and so I had no interest in seeing it in theaters. It was on HBO this past week or two, and so I just caught it on there. It was on in the background while I was doing something. And it was a lot better than I thought it would be.
Could you see the point where they actually ran out of special effects budget about 80% of the way through?
No.
Wait, in the CG version? I'm not talking about the original ones. I'm talking about the one that just came out like a year ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm not talking.
Ran out of Patrick Stewart budget,
yeah,
which is really all they needed.
They had so much money, they gave him hair.
Yeah.
That must have been expensive.
Did ridiculous. They render each individual brilliant follicle?
But... While I was watching that, there's a scene where Splinter walks by.
Dead.
Splinter walks by. They're going to bring him back, apparently. But Splinter's walking
by. His helmet is like the last ominous shot. But yeah.
No, because the head of the Foot Clan says that she's got business to deal with them that involves names they once knew or something. Anyway, the point being that Splinter walks by and he's humming the theme to Katamari Damacy. And I didn't catch it at first until he's like, it starts going, duggity, 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 and then just keeps on walking. And okay.
I didn't catch that.
I'm sorry. All you people are dumb.
I never played. So
when my jokes fall flat, it's your fault. So do people take gaming too seriously? And I am going to start. Well, all right, Luke, you threw out an answer, so go with it.
He started with me, gentlemen. Who would have thought? I'm like the Hillary
you
Clinton.
You were the first.
I'm the Hillary Clinton of Fear the Boot, is how this works
how
out.
How is that?
John?
Would you like a...
Can I'll I get start. You anything? Would you like
a... Yeah, boobs. Would you like a pillow, John?
Oh, I'm the Obama. All right. I like it.
I guess you're the Ron Paul.
Well, I am underfunded.
And you have a large internet following.
I'm going to have the audacity of picking up my Coors Light.
That all right. Audacious. Yes, I... We can't paint too broad a picture here because everybody's different. But as a whole, if you're on the internet, generally talking about games, most people I found take them too seriously. I never really understand the amount of hate people spew on other people who are playing games. We make fun of games all the time.
Right.
You know, riffs, all the usual stuff.
We make fun of the ones we like.
We usually make fun of the ones we like.
Yeah. We spend probably more verbiage, making fun of games we like than the ones we don't like. So.
We're approaching making fun of how much we make fun of things right now.
Probably, I mean, we'll probably get to making fun of Savage Worlds here soon, since I've become the Savage Worlds from just the pimp to like the salesman now. It's like, I'm not trying to sell. It's good.
Now you're a corporate shill and I don't like you anymore.
I am. I should buy stock. Anyway, not the point. The thing that bothers me the most about most forums is when people talk about, oh, I'm playing this game, blah, 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 and you get the people come in, oh, that game sucks, that game blows, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know what? If they're having fun with it, why are you messing with them? You can make fun of the game, but if a game group is playing riffs and they're enjoying the hell out of it, more power to them.
You know, it's the nature of fanboyism.
It's pretty radical.
Whatever you're into is way cooler than what they're into.
I just never get it.
I typically see this, and this may be somewhat just because of what we do, but I see this usually in the reverse, that it's not, and I'm not saying what you're describing doesn't happen, because I've seen plenty of that, but what I see more often personally is where somebody will come in and down something, and that's just like unacceptable. I mean, it's like you just peed on some holy shrine. I mean, that someone would dare to not like Game X.
Ironically, this did just happen on our own forum. Somebody came in with a thread titled Savage Worlds Hate, and about how his game group just did not like it and blah, blah, blah. And he posted like all their complaints. I'm like, well, and the actual complaints, it was a bunch of stuff they're getting wrong in the rules.
Right.
But I'm like, but you know what? If they don't like it and they're not having fun with it and they obviously are not budging, don't play it. Play something else they like. Everybody should be
able to.
But
more than that, beyond that, I'd say it's okay not to like it.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's not just a matter of, okay, don't play it. But if you come to me and say, oh, I just can't stand Battletech. I've played it inside out, can't stand. Or heck, let's hit closer to home. You tell me that you've played the Sky's Glass Tier 1 stuff, or you've played, you know, in one of my Epoch or Iphosos games or something. You say, oh, I just couldn't stand, it's just total crap. That's okay.
It's fine.
It's fine. And it kind of baffles me.
It's almost like there's lots of different games to cater to lots of different tastes.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason that is because it's okay for people to like some things and not like others, to have standards of what they do.
Right. Well, and you guys have heard me how much I bash on story games and the story stick here. But you get the guys like Scott Dumpy and the like who are like, whoa, you know, you're wrong about this. I'm like, you know, I'm happy not liking story games, but I'm glad your games with them work out. Great, because apparently they do. He has nothing bad to say, and if he and his group are having fun, woo, good times. I'm happy for him.
There's a Luke Woo.
Oh, crap. It's like now I'm overdoing it, and I'm not even trying.
Classic LARP versus tabletop.
Oh, LARP sucks.
LARP sucks.
I don't LARP myself, but I know some people who really enjoy it.
They're wrong.
What about a recent review of podcasts we read in a certain place where every tabletop podcast there was something terribly wrong with, but the LARPing podcast was brilliant beyond belief. It was God's gift. It's like, really? I wonder what this guy plays.
Yeah.
And you're not going to put your name on the story, so we don't know who you are.
Yeah, no, I was a contributor.
It was awesome.
But you know what? That's okay.
Yeah, and whatever, man.
I was kind of... You know, I've been on both sides. So let me throw out here my theory, and this is a broad brush theory here on why I think this happens. I am
deeping.
I'm going to go a little bit deeper than that. I think that's
deeper.
The
deeper.
I'm going to push deeper.
Banging bottom.
But I think that if you look at the people that are in the gaming community, so many of these people have been, I don't know, disenfranchised, for lack of a better term, from other parts of their lives.
Marginalized. Oh, jinx.
You guys can't talk until I say one of your names.
All right.
So, you just talked. Now you're off the podcast.
What? Okay. You never said you never kick anybody off.
I know. Fine. Luke, Matt, there. You can both talk.
Yay.
Now.
All
right.
Lame. But
the point being that when you take people who have been marginalized so many ways in life, they're going to invest their emotions and their passion into something.
They're going to lash out on a podcast.
And so
somebody's on the internet and they're wrong. I can't go to bed yet. Yeah.
Right. And so I think that. What That's happens so right. is here's people who are really have had their fill of being put down or kicked around. Here's people who do not have a lot of emotions invested in other areas in life. And so they instead focus them like a laser beam on this hobby. And I'm not just talking about gamers here, because this is not a specifically gamer thing. You can find people in sports. And
your team indie. Sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Indie rock band.
You know, Cubs blow.
That band before you did.
As long as there are parents shooting each other in T-ball stands and soccer brawls in Europe, or football, as you may call it, in Europe.
The riot cop contingent at the soccer games in Rome is impressive and worth going for itself.
They got nothing up. They've got nothing really up on gamers. So, but the point being still that you get these
actually
people
fitness.
Where they focus
longevity.
Well, and
social acceptance.
Right. Okay. I actually have a lot upon us. So the point being that, you know, that you focus like a laser beam on it, then probably you're going to have very little tolerance for people to put this down because of how much you care about it.
I see. I completely see your point. When I was younger and I had, at college, where there were a ton of gamers, and I was familiar with virtually all of them, and I could see the marginalized groups. You know, when the people I play with now are, you know, mostly all healthy adults who have great social lives.
And how much do you care when people put those games down?
Not at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely my point.
It's like, I mean, especially if you have a valid reason, great. If you don't, like Dave. Let's bash Dave some, because it's fun to bash Dave.
Okay,
because he's
fine.
So small.
And he's not here.
He's not here. And he'll call me as soon as he gets it. It's like, you.
But I'm he
like,
will beat you at War Machine.
Oh, yeah. He will dominate you at War Machine. He is small, but filled with mad War Machine skills. That guy's crazy nuts. Dave, as I've talked about, he just does not like dice pool systems. There's no reason for it. I mean, he has his reasons, but they're not real reasons. And
what?
And he does not. He does not like dice pool systems. So I wanted to run Vampire. He's like, not really keen on the dice pool. I'm like, well, we'll play something that's not dice pool then. You know, it's illogical, and he knows it, too. He knows it. He probably knows that there's no real reason to hate a system just because of the way it uses dice.
Actually, I'm gonna agree with him. Like, the old storyteller system, the way it used dice pools, it was bad.
Yeah, now, granted, he's an engineer, so that when things mathematically go wrong, like the old storyteller system, I can see where he's coming from on that.
I still have a very bad heartburn edition from where 22 dice were canceled out by 5 dice.
Yeah, when it's like, there was actually a mathematical point where if you rolled more than this amount of dice, you actually had a bigger chance of botching and failing than you did of getting a success, which is kind of weird. But beside the point, I mean, that's a... I consider that not a valid complaint, but Dave doesn't like it. We're not going to play it. We'll play something else that doesn't use a dice pool. Because I can argue till the face comes home. I'm like, well, you should like dice pools because this and this and this.
So you can argue until the face comes home?
Until the face. Don't you guys have faces out in the fields?
I think you crossed the lines there.
You've mixed a metaphor somewhere.
I just don't know what the other metaphor would be.
The cows come home.
If I had my book, if I had my beautiful, beautiful book, I could be searching on the word face until I figured it out.
I think your idea about emotional investment is pretty much right on. Because if you switch from gamer subculture to a similar subculture, the comic book thing, you know, who hasn't seen the Marvel guy versus the DC guy almost come to physical blows because they're each so emotionally invested.
But what happens when Marvel and DC both start sucking like they have recently?
The amalgam line.
The Dark Horse guy sits back and laughs.
I was going to say, yeah, ooh, I'm reading Hellboy now and Preacher, and I'm really enjoying myself. Thank you.
But since the Vertigo kids all LARP, it's all canceled out.
Everybody dresses as Sandman. They just don't know it.
I think there is a kind of a balance here, though, where it is possible to take the hobby not seriously enough. And let me explain that very carefully, because I think you have to see this as a hobby. And if you're at a point where you're becoming angry over the hobby, over people's views on your hobby,
it's a game.
Yeah, you've gone too far. But having said that, I think you do have to take the game seriously enough to play it.
Now, yeah,
because I've seen people in the far opposite extreme where they sit down, the whole thing's a joke. And you know, that's going to ruin any experience.
It's a joke game.
Well, okay, but I'm sure we've all been
started on that.
We've all been in the movie theater where somebody who didn't take a movie seriously that everybody else in the theater was trying to take seriously, and it ruins your movie.
Well, we've all said in many episodes that that one guy can ruin a game session if he's not in the right mood.
I have had whole games ruined because one person at the table just would not even try to play the game, would not take it even seriously enough just to do the hobby. I'm not talking about living and breathing it or being unable to handle people poking fun at it or anything like that, but we couldn't play the game. So
there's also his twin brother perma GM who's trying to be a player character and will sabotage your game so that he can take the seat back.
Yeah, that too.
Well, actually, I think on rule page 132 you'll see that you're a complete idiot.
I you know, there's a lot of times listening to these people online and this happens a lot in my life, that I think back to my favorite movie, The Big Lebowski, with probably one of the most true quotes ever, with, yeah, Walter, you're right, but you're still an hole. It's like,
that was good self-censorship.
Thank you. It sounds like it was beeped, but it wasn't.
Say that word on air.
Can we? I thought we couldn't use the last part of it.
I could see Luke's mouth moving, and yet the profanity didn't come
out. Because I didn't say it.
You know what's funny is I went out and actually looked up what the rating standards are in podcasts, and there really aren't any clear ones.
Well, it's like, what's pornography?
Yeah, there's no... Well, at least then...
I know it when I see it.
You have some community standards or FCC precedent to go by. In podcasts, there's nothing. There's just no clear... So.
We're the Wild West of the digital frontier.
Well, until we get regulated, which probably won't ever happen because it's the internet.
I hope not.
No. Matt, you're Ron Paul. You better make sure we're never regulated.
Yeah.
I don't believe in regulation.
Penis goes where?
I'm just going to go ahead and ruin the healthcare system, so. Well.
All righty.
Well.
Board games. Let's move off of this then. Quickly do turn here.
I wasn't quite done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I did have one point.
Okay.
And we've brought this up before, but the people I've seen who by far and away take things way too seriously. As a group, there are obviously individuals who are partially in and out of this. Is theory people. They take things so seriously, and you can't even talk to them without speaking their language. It's like, guys, we're playing games here. This isn't rocket science. Don't make it rocket science.
Yes.
Roll some dice, have some fun, pretend you're an ogre.
It doesn't bother me when people really are interested in the theory, that they love the math or whatever. But when that starts to become like a cancer that grows into everything they touch,
you know, it's not math.
They can't talk to somebody without getting pretentious and obnoxious. It's gone too far. If that's your hobby, great, whatever.
But it's not,
no problem.
It's not the math and the systems. I mean, I love tinkering with systems. I mean, I may be terrible for that, but the people I'm speaking of, this broad group, really are into defining and labeling every aspect of the hobby. And if you try to use a different definition, you know, it's bad online. Well, like any forum, it becomes a sewer trying to negotiate, you know, who's talking about what, since there's no, you know, like we talked about today, what is a role-playing game? Is D&D not a role-playing game? Yes, it is, because Chad's wrong, but I don't know. Now I'm rambling off, and I'm not making any points here, so go on to the next thing.
Well, I think using the Chad's wrong criteria is pretty solid.
I completely agree with that, because Chad and I disagree on virtually everything, and we still have a ton of fun hanging out. Our epic duel of Game Breaker versus Railroader over the entire day of the con.
That was pretty funny. All right, let's talk board games. Let me give you a little bit of some background of where I'm coming from with board games. And I want to, because to this point in our history of the show, I don't know that we've really focused a lot on board games. We've mentioned them in passing. But one of the conundrums I have in my life is I like role-playing games because of their complexity. And I think that the flexibility and complexity of role-playing games has soured me to other forms of gaming. When the rook enters the square with my pawn, I want my pawn to have options. And it bothers me that he doesn't. And it's kind of the same thing. Like when I'm playing a game like Monopoly or something like that, I have to add complexity to it. Just because, I don't know why. It's just, I think role-playing games have soured me, like I said, on other forms of gaming.
So does that mean you're a free parking man?
So... But one of the issues that I have is it's not always feasible when you want to game to get a role-playing game going. For example, maybe you're at a con and you want to do a pickup game. Well, it's a lot easier to grab three or four random people and throw together a random game of a board game than it is to try to grab three or four people, get character sheets photocopied, figure out what you're doing, get characters rolled up, and somebody try to pull a plot out of their butt and then get a role-playing game going. Or in situations like where I'm hanging out with my family, one of my sisters is an avid board gamer. She loves Monopoly and just all the traditional Milton Bradley style board games. And so
Bradley's an outfielder.
Every time we have a family get together, she's wanting to whip out Pictionary or whatever. And of course, I'm always gritting
Pictionary,
the game that ends families.
You have
families.
A lot of options in Pictionary. No, Balderdash is the game that ends families.
Yeah, Balderdash does end families. Or Beyond Balderdash is even worse.
Yes, it is. Pictionary, at least you're trying to help someone else succeed. In Balderdash, it is pure treachery on everyone's party.
There's so much politicking in Balderdash. It's not even funny. It always ends up trying to be wrong, but as funny as possible.
Oh, no,
and see if you get the votes. Yeah, that's really how you play.
I've seen so many Pictionary's games go down to this, circle it. Can't you tell what this is?
Oh, I've stormed out of a Pictionary game after doing that before.
Carl's got a game that could be a family ender called Imagine If, where you like take the names of everyone at the table, and it would be like, imagine if Luke was a house. Would he be like number one a mansion, number two a double wide, number three? And it's like, it'll give you like just,
wow.
And what you have to
if
do.
If you were made of hot dogs and you had relish, would you eat yourself?
I would. I'd be the best hot dog I ever ate.
I'd be a bungalow. God.
What you have to do to win is you put down, like, you take those numbered options and everybody, you have five cards, just like 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And I have to put face down the card that I think matches it. So let's say I pick the double wide. So I put down two. And you have to be in the majority at the table.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
So Luke, you big double wide trailer, you. If we put down those cards, and the majority had two. But anyway, point being.
I'm a real doctor.
So, prefab's a real home, so. Anyway, back at Fear the Con, I was thinking about this, about the convenience of board games. And it's really great that within sort of the role-playing game community, it's kind of off the fringe of it, there is this great little subgenre of board games.
I think you've got that backwards. There's a huge board gaming community, and RPGs are
It on Fear the Boot, so now it's true.
Okay.
The numbers will just adjust to match what I said.
People who
eventually.
All have Monopoly in their closet really think of themselves as a community.
No. I'm not talking about...
I play
about,
a oh, shoe oh. in my Monopoly game.
I'm not talking about... No. You should let me finish.
I'm a boat.
There's a subgenre of really...
Subgenre.
Really complex... board games.
Uh-huh.
Now, I realize, obviously, people own a Milton Bradley board game greatly outnumber the people that own the D&D Player's Handbook. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Carcassonne, Settlers of Catan.
Speaking of which, did you enjoy my little tour de role-playing or de board games when you were in there? You're like, let's pick a game. So, let me describe
it. And that's the second thing that got me thinking about it. My dad's really into trains. My sister's really into board games. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe we can make everybody happy. I'll pick up a board game that has greater complexity than Monopoly,
but is still a board game, so the family feels comfortable with it, and I picked up Ticket to Ride. And if they seem to do well with that, then I can try to push over into other things like Arkham Horror or Settlers of Carcassonne or Settlers of Catan or anything like that.
On my recommendation to us, this Ticket to Ride is one of my favorite board games and also one of my favorite bridge games, because it kind of does bridge that gap between gamer and non-gamer. It's like just like Settlers and Carcassonne, like you just said.
But anyway, that's the attraction to me within that kind of board game, is the fact that it's easier to pick up and put together than a role-playing game is. Doesn't carry the same stigma, meaning it could be a nice gateway drug. And on top of that, though, it's something that can appeal to people who are into board games and has that complexity that I'm looking for. So,
well, the thing is, I mean, like Ticket to Ride and Settlers have a certain level of complexity. It kind of like says bridges the gap. There are plenty of games out there for the really hardcore, though.
Arkham Horror.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I used to live with, in college, a bunch of my friends were huge board gamers and loved the, you know, Axis and Allies and every version of it.
There's an Axis and Allies game sitting in a table on my basement waiting for summer break, because we played on spring break. And
yep, we had many a board set up for months, yeah, waiting for somebody to take a turn because they were just gone. It's like somebody could come in. But when I ended up moving in with them later after we were out of school, and he'd discovered the wide world of other board games, and I helped along too. We found some just great stuff. Like one of my absolute favorite board games, which is one of the most complex and detailed games I've ever played, is War of the Ring, which is a Lord of the Rings war game where basically you get to rewrite the books as you go about causing, you know, fighting wars. Like I end up bringing the dwarves down to save Lothlorien from siege from the Mordor troops who just bypassed Gondor.
Say, how the hell did they get past Gondor and Rohan?
They did not mobilize fast enough. They squeezed up there, and they got a pincer maneuver from Moria and from Mordor, and I had to take the Book of Grudges, which I had, and you go and activate the dwarves, and they came down, and they saved Lothlorien and then cut down all the trees.
How unlikely.
Yeah, and it was great because at the
when
end of
this
it,
game come out, I want to play it.
It was about 3 or 4 years ago. Now it is.
Do you own it?
Yeah.
All right.
I haven't played in years because
it's War of the Ring Party.
It's a 2-player game. You can go up to 4 players because you can do 2 on a side. And the only trouble is the rules are we ended up playing it right. We played maybe 11 or 12 games of it, and every time we're like, oh, I guess we forgot that rule because there are just so many rules. But it's a great game.
I want to check it out.
And I think 2 important words that haven't been said yet. Avalon Hill.
Ooh, yes, Avalon Hill. Good times there.
Yeah, they published Axis and Allies now.
I guess Milton Bradley owns.
Yeah, Avalon they got
and all their properties.
Right, they got bought out and long ago.
But I mean, you talk about a huge library of really complex games to relatively simple games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's kind of like the Avalon Hill came up during the '60s, '70s through the '80s. Then, like in the '80s, the Euro games kind of, you know, took that and polished it. Made it a little bit more streamlined. That's when the Settlers and some of
when the German games started, or not German, yes, the European style games started getting big. I tell you what's become a great pastime. The, you know, card games have become really big again, the non-collectible kind. And our gaming group, before the Deadlands game started, we started off almost every session with 3 or 4 rounds of Infernal Contraption, which is just a fantastically fun card game.
Let's bicker pedantically for a minute here.
Uh-oh.
Would you consider something like Task Force's Star Trek game, Starfleet Battles, would you consider that a board game? And if and why or why not?
I've never played.
I would consider it more of a miniature war game. It falls under the wargaming category in my book. But a lot of war games can be considered, you could still consider board games. Battletech being a big one, because if you play it on the hex map, really you are playing it on a board.
Right,
it's a board game, but it's not. You know, there's definitely crossover there. There's overlap.
In my mind, anything more complicated than Axis and Allies stops being a board game, starts being a war game.
Well, I mean, it all depends on how you define it.
I say, if I had to give it a definition, just for the sake of conversation, I would say if you have to focus number one on modeling, and number two, in addition to modeling, you're moving around via rulers and such, you've probably moved out of the realm.
Well, I would agree. I wouldn't actually call Battletech a board game, but since most people play it on hex maps,
I would consider Battletech a board
game
personally. Yeah.
See,
now I think once you meld it with the history and the culture and the RPG,
I don't think that does a thing to take it out of a board game or war game.
I think it does, because if you're at least playing it the way we've always played it, your character sheet's just as important as anything that's on the field.
Yeah, I've never played, except for the game I played with you, I've never played Battletech as an RPG. It's, I'm piloting an awesome, I've got three other mechs. There's no role playing. I'm going and shooting stuff.
Right, and that is how
and trying to win.
Play. Right, yeah.
But does anything that you have to bring other books into, you know, if you can't put it in a cardboard box,
I don't know if you can define it that way. I mean, because
well, we can if we want to.
Yes, we can. But I mean, how many games have how many?
Yes,
board
we can.
Games?
That's my line.
We could eat rocks if we want to. But
how many games do we know that have board games that do expansions now? I mean, there are tons of them. It takes multiple True. Boxes because they found out you can do some cool things with expansions.
And make money with them.
Infernal Contraption has expansions.
Yeah, it was brilliant that they actually...
All the Munchkin games have
Contraption. My Munchkin box is so filled with expansion cards.
Another good one. Another good card game that's fun to play. There's a ton of great board games. There's several out there. As I mentioned earlier, I've always wanted to play the StarCraft board game, and I'm always so busy doing something else that people are...
Always short of the $10,000 required to buy it.
I actually put down the money for the Sid Meier Civilization game. Have never actually got through a game.
I love Eagle Games is a company that made that, and they make games, and I bought several of them because they have ridiculous number of pieces and humongous boards that barely fit on two tables. I have their game Attack, which is pretty much a beer and pretzels version of Axis and Allies with some crazy stuff going on. Like I made Australia. I was in the communist country of Australia. Basically, you didn't have any set rules. It was the world, but oh look, I'm in the monarchy of the old South in the U.S. and you could go from there. And it was so much fun.
I say, sitting in the tanks.
I mean, yeah, it was it's a different kind of experience, but it's fun. But I love that their games are just unapologetically humongous, and you're probably not going to finish. But seeing that board set up, it's like that's a huge board. I like it.
What is the appeal to you of board games? What would motivate you to pick up a board game instead of a role playing game?
Well, generally. There's no prep time. If you all know the rules.
Accessibility of play.
Accessibility
of
play.
I can just pick it up with my brother and my high school buddies or my college buddies or my parents or anyone and just sit down and do it.
Duration, level of attention.
Yeah. Now, the hard part is the reason I haven't bought any of the board games that I want, like the Warcraft board game when it came out, the StarCraft board game, is because ever since I've moved out of my friend's house, I haven't played a board game besides a few card games, in about 2.5 years. Well, 3 years since I moved out of there because we used to play all the time, but... Now I don't have people over. When I have people over, we don't play board games. And it's not usually for such a long period of time we could play a board game I'd like. I mean, we can get a couple rounds of Settlers or Ticket to Ride or maybe Munchkin, but if I want to do War of the Ring, that's setting aside a whole afternoon or even a whole day if you want to do a couple
rounds. Like computer games, there's games that you play in 20 minutes, and then there's games where you sit down with one or two other people and say, okay, this is the project. This
Very
is
true.
Civ 4 for the next 12 hours.
Yeah, I'll say Civilization, yeah. And I'm talking about the video game here, not the board game. The board game is just as bad. That if you want to play Civilization in any of its forms, you better have the next 3 days blocked out.
It's fun to do it. You don't do it every day.
You do it all day every day for a while.
You do it all day every day, once or twice a year.
Well,
is what
just
I mean.
Like role playing, if you have a board game of sufficient complexity, you have to schedule out ahead of time.
Yeah, people especially have to understand this is not a
older
beer
into
and
the
pretzels
adult
party.
No, I've got to be honest. I don't know what it is about my personality, but I love board games, but there's a certain time limit. I've never been able to figure out what it is where I hit. I stop caring. I stop paying attention. I can start getting really bored. I just roll the dice, and I may try to win, but it's usually several hours in where it's like, okay, I've had enough. There's a definite limit
for me. It's about an hour or two.
See, I think I got about three.
I think the Monopoly ceiling is pretty well culturally accepted. A lot of people say that they never finish a game and it goes on too long. As gamers, we find that funny because what's a game Monopoly take? 2 hours at the most?
Actually, you can get it
longer.
down to a half hour if you're good.
Well, same reverse. I see them going all day.
Yeah, same
Which
here.
Is funny because with a role-playing game, I don't have that problem. I can play a role-playing game assuming it's going well. And I don't mean like, oh, it's the best game ever. I just mean going generally well. I can play that crap all day long.
And because it's because there's a story involved.
Yeah, but with, I think a board game, I just don't know if it doesn't occupy enough of my attention or what it is.
Yeah,
but I burn out on them very quickly.
Now, in the thing about War of the Ring, where literally, like I said, you literally are rewriting Lord of the Rings from basically the Council of Elrond to however it ends.
Yeah.
It is, it's really awesome. And by doing that,
being neck deep in the Lord of the Rings stuff all the time, like you and I are, would make the game 10 times more fun than just picking it up as a strategy war game and not being able to plug in, oh crap, what if they ran back up to the Lonely Mountain and this huge contingent of dwarves came down?
There's so many what ifs as we're playing. Yeah. What if the dwarves come down to Rohan and take Helm's Deep, and then that way we can defend there.
Yeah. I think that's why the World War II games are so popular too.
Yeah, that's part of the fun too.
And you know, speaking of World War II games, I have one game I've always wanted to play but never had a chance to is Memoir 44, because it I've heard it satisfies the strategy board gaming itch without getting into very long games. In fact, they're so compact that you basically you're supposed to play and then switch sides and play again. It's a World War II board game that looks fantastic and fun. And Battle Lore too. It's the fantasy version, which also looks like a lot of fun, but again, is a pretty big expense. I got a question though. If anyone else has,
I wonder
else.
How that compares in complexity to say like the Squad Leader tactical level combat.
Yeah, that's not. It's Squad Leader's 10 levels above it. This thing is not.
The Squad Leader, the only game that I've ever had that has a learning curve as you go through the 10 teaching scenarios. Oh,
I tried to read Advanced Squad Leader, and I'm like, I love miniature war games. I like World War II, and I like realistic strategy like this. I don't like this. This is too much. This is algebra, and I don't want to do algebra today.
So, I don't think we ever got through all 10 learning scenarios. About number 5, we're like, should we just go play some Magic?
Yeah. I found out, you know, it's like, this isn't fun. Let's go build a map in HeroScape, because I loved that game. Have you guys seen that? It's basically, it's in the toy section. It's all those little fantasy hexes. You build a map, and they give you fantasy, sci-fi, all these figures, and a reason to fight. It's basically a really, really, I don't want to say dumbed down, but a very simple miniatures game on a board you build. And I bought a ton of terrain for this for role-playing purposes. I have all these hexes. I can build anything with these that requires hexes. It's a lot of fun. It takes a little time to put together, but we'd all get together, lay out all the miniatures, pick out the ones we want. We'd all build parts of the map, put them together, and then just play. And it was always fun because it was just so random and cool.
So Luke, what's your question?
Do you guys know the one game? We talked about games that could end family relationships.
Uh-huh.
There is one game that I refuse to play that most people I know who've played it refuse to play that can literally and will end friendships and cause fights that will last for years. Do you guys know what this is? It's been around for decades.
Uno and or Phase 4.
No.
Russian Roulette.
No.
Yeah.
It will end friendships forever.
No, I don't know. I'm just...
Diplomacy.
Oh, yeah. Diplomacy will destroy you.
Diplomacy will destroy a group. When you start backstabbing people and politicking, it's terrible. It's terrible to watch.
Diplomacy will expose just how well you can lie and manipulate your friends.
But you, by winning, you become a horrible person.
I was going to say, that's the way we play Munchkin.
Well, that's different. Munchkin has funny pictures. Diplomacy does not.
It's backstabbing, you know, without the comedy.
It's funny because we just got done talking about people that take games too seriously. But once you're in that zone, it gets
Have you ever played Diplomacy, Dan?
No, I've not.
There is no randomization at all.
You have to have people support your cause. You have to get people on your side. So you make alliances. There's no guarantee anybody will hold up to their alliances. Yeah. It's like...
It's the prisoner's dilemma every turn. You make all these agreements with all these different people, and you have no idea what they're actually going to do. And then it's all revealed at once, and everyone kills each other.
And if everybody turns on you and knocks you back, you're not out of the game, but you're so far behind, it's like all you want to do is screw them over again. And it just is this vicious cycle of people backstabbing each other. Like, you can only play with strangers because it will ruin friendship.
I was going to say, it's a part of the point of a board game is, of course, in all these contexts we've talked about it, they all have one thing in common, which is wanting to have a good time with a small number of people. You're looking to use the board game to enrich your whatever the experience of that moment
fails
is,
at that.
Not to tear it down. Because
now, say there's an apocalypse and you're looking to rebuild society and you want a cabinet, you want people to do it with you. You need to weed people out by using diplomacy. The people who win are the people you want with you. But
or maybe people you don't want with
you. Or maybe that. It's hard to say.
I was turned off to it because Italy is very, very weak.
It is really weak. I knew people who would play seriously. Like they would research the official titles of the rulers and have like they would have roles that they would read. And usually at the start of the game, and then as time goes on, they do it less and less. But diplomacy is hardcore stuff, man.
So at Fear the Con, there's some guys out there demoing a board game they're working on,
Atomic Earth,
called Atomic Earth. And I did not play a game,
nor did I, sadly.
But
nor
did I did stand and observe for a while.
I stand the guy who was running it. Was so into it. Like, I stood there because I've been talking to him by email. I wanted to shake his hand and say hello.
Right.
But he was into his game and running it well. And I was watching. I'm like, I'm not 100% sure what's happening, but they seem to be building a board with hexes that represent terrain, and there's giant monsters.
I say, Luke, that's
why am I not playing this?
That's something you and I have both come to love, is building things in the course of a game.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you're building the terrain. you know, or Infernal Contraption, you're building your contraption or whatever. But in this one, you lay out the terrain throughout some part of the game, and then you play across it. And the shtick is it's kind of has a pseudo-fantasy feel, but it's done through super science. It's like post-nuclear war, and you've got giant mutant monsters are running around, and you're trying to get these like quantum shards to repower the city that you're associated with, or something to that effect. Like I said, I only caught a little bit of it.
How do quantum sharks power a city?
Shards, not
they,
sharks.
They get jumped over by Fonzie.
But you go out and you go around and collect these things, and you kind of draw on the monsters and make them fight for you, and they beat each other up. But it was a pretty cool game, and it fits all of my requirements for a board game. But
yeah, I'm watching it closely, and when he emailed me about it, he was talking about, look, we're going to have, this is still in demo phase. We still are, this will be a good place to iron out the rules. And I'm really looking for feedback, and people
quantum
get
sharks
playtest credits, or possibly that kind of thing, and a bunch of goodies and further info on the game. And I'm like, I can get to play. I want stuff on this game. I want to see. It looks so cool.
Where is the Atomics game made from?
Oh, we'll link it in the show notes, because I want to say it's like Critical Press Media. Off the top of my head.
Geographically.
Oh, what?
I'm just saying Road Trip.
Oh. I don't know where it's from, where the guys are from, but I have, I'll have to find the link. I have it in my email.
Okay.
Because I want to know more about the game too.
We'll definitely put it up. It's still in development phase, but it looked like a ton of fun.
Yeah, people were laughing and pointing, and it was so powerful. It gave a kid a nosebleed.
Did it really?
Yeah. Didn't see the nosebleed kid?
Huh.
He was like, all of a sudden I hear all these chairs scoot back, and and this kid's like, and his dad takes him back, and he got taken care of quickly.
Nobody jacked him in the face?
Fear the cocaine.
No, like I said, this game was so intense that he just hemorrhaged.
I would point out that atomic radiation will not cause the nosebleeds.
What will it cause, Matt?
The putrefaction of your inner organs.
Yeah, but only really, really high rads.
It's a good thing we didn't have you around when we were writing Skies of Glass.
I don't claim to have the expertise he does. This is what he does for a living, but I did do quite a bit of reading into that stuff. So,
just remember, kids, keep it below 500 rads. Yeah.
Tier 1 won't represent a lot of that, but in Tier 2 and Tier 3, we'll get pretty ugly with that kind of stuff. But anyway.
You're pretty ugly with that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. You're just ugly in general. So, but that is something. Let's talk about that in board games. One of the nice things about board games, because of how short they are to play, is your ability to build something meaningful and not have that forever change the game experience. You know, for example, in a role-playing game, you have to accomplish what you're going to accomplish slowly, because whatever you've accomplished up to this point is going to be there for the rest of your campaign.
And when you're done, you're done. So
yeah.
Your GM can't just let you win.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless he's Endermilk.
I don't know how many times.
Kicked the last guy in the balls.
Chad broke somebody else's game. That was fantastic.
Pooh's kid kicked Pokey in the nuts, and that was the end of the Earthbound game.
I would have to. We forgot to give big props to Ender for literally stopping the con with his monologuing for his villain as everybody turned to look at him in the middle. It's like, wow.
That was the slot where I was in another room.
Yeah, you were in the back room. You missed it. He literally, everybody just stopped and looked, because it was fun to
watch.
Yeah,
we were all looking around our table going, Pokey?
we had to go to the back room, because by that point I had so much lost my voice I couldn't keep yelling over people, and
I couldn't do my devil high pitched enough because my high range was gone.
The six guys I was gaming with, they're all really good role players, but they're also soft spoken. So between my messed up voice and them being so soft spoken, we just relocated to the game swap room, and actually it was much, much easier. We could all talk at very soft volumes and be heard very
like
well.
Like Cyborgs versus Side Pockets.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We were talking about board games, though. We got off topic.
Right. So anyway, getting back to board games. Luke, what's your personal favorite?
That's a really, really hard question. Currently, I'm a huge fan of Infernal Contraption for like a fun, quick game.
Mm-hmm.
I do enjoy the strategy war games, and War of the Ring is probably the most fun because it has both the great Lord of the Rings element to it. It's a great war game just in general, and there's a storytelling aspect to it. Well, if you play like I do. Games I'd love to play that I haven't yet is the StarCraft board game and the Game of Thrones board game. Both really appeal to me, but I haven't had a chance to sit down with them.
John?
My favorite is probably Settlers. In an ideal world where everyone had my gaming preferences and my love for exactly what I love, probably would be Axis and Allies, but in reality, it's a little tough to get a regular game of Axis and Allies going on, especially to completion.
You know, there's a reason Settlers is the game that pretty much everybody's played.
It's the common currency of the a little bit higher grade board game, and I'm fine with that. I think it's a really fun game.
It's a great game.
My favorite is the old Avalon Hill civilization. It's
Isn't
one of
the one that takes like a week to play.
It moves pretty slow, but it's just so deep. You know, you can really get your fingers in it and go, the Babylonians are tromping over me again. But it's delicious. As far as new modern stuff, you know, we tend to play a bit of Munchkin. That's always
fun.
Good for a little backstabbity action.
Yeah. But they're funny pictures, so it doesn't ruin friendships.
We also occasionally will have a board game night where we'll pull out like samurai swords, the old shogun.
Real samurai swords. Maybe you're playing diplomacy.
That's after diplomacy. Or if my friend's wives are around, it'll be more like apples to apples.
Apples to apples is a lot of fun.
I played it at Festivus Con for the first time, and I thought it was a riot. That's a fun game.
That is a beer and pretzels game.
It's not really a
10.
Game.
It gets old quick, though.
Yeah.
It's hysterical for a short while. My problem with apples to apples was the group that John and I have been hanging out with, they played it too damn much. And
it's not like you can, you know, memorize or no right answers.
Well, but see, the thing is, it becomes predictable.
Pass around the table, it's like, JFK was wrinkly. And it's just not funny anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I can see that.
And it becomes predictable because you always know, you may not have the card, but you know the kind of answer that everyone at the table is going to want. There's always one straight arrow who wants the right answer. If you put down JFK, if someone puts down JFK, you better put down like president or whatever. And those people ruin the game.
We were talking about Baldur's.
It's better when people like say like Hitler was fluffy or something like that. You know,
we were talking about Baldur's Dash earlier. We always had, you know, all of us would just go goofy. There was always one person who would play it straight and was like, "This is," and they're like, "You guys are ruining the game.
Well,
you don't know."
The funny thing about Baldur's Dash is that you can play it goofy and still fool people because some of the words they pick out are ridiculous.
It's true. My favorite are the movies from Beyond Baldur's Dash.
I like the movies.
The movies are always
fun. We've had some good times doing the movie plots.
I'm gonna give two. One?
You would.
Well, no.
I gave three.
Well,
give
Matt gave
I'll
like
give
18,
him a break.
So.
All
right. I'm going to give two here because one of them you guys may not
I
count.
I gave two.
This one is about 20 years old, and you may not even consider this a board game, but Crossbows and Catapults.
Love. You know, they just re-released that.
Did they really?
They have ridiculous number of expansions already. They have all kinds of new weapons. And Josh, who's in your new gaming group.
Do they have the Cyclops again?
I don't remember.
Do they
I
make you sign a waiver that you're not going to poke your eye out with the sprung?
No, that's long darts.
I don't know, but it's been released. It's called
yard
like
darts,
they don't call it Castle and Crusades anymore. They call it something else.
Crossbows and Catapults. That was the name.
Crossbows and Catapults. But they it's called something different, and that's the subtitle.
Uh-huh.
But they literally have like 10 expansions out for it. Like, here's the Ogre Tower with the new catapult and like the triple firing crossbow.
Excellent. I'm just looking into this.
Yeah, go to Toys R Us.
The one that I would give that's more of a, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, sorry. I cut you off.
The one of that I was going to give that's more of a traditional modern board game would be Arkham Horror. And I like it because of the fact that it's about as close as you can get to a role-playing game without actually playing a role-playing game.
I saw the board.
Because you've got a character, the character has equipment, you have a quest, the people that you're playing with, you're all working as a team. And that's one of the things I love teamwork. I'm a huge fan of cooperation over competition any day of the week. And so I like the fact that in the game, you're actually working together against a common goal. So that's what I'd have to give.
You know, a game I'll let you borrow. You might like it. The game I've found that's closest to a role-playing game that's a board game is Runebound, because it basically is. It's a role-playing campaign you play as a board game. You have you have a hero who can form a party, who goes on quest to collect gold and gain experience, and eventually defeat whatever plot, which there are several plots for it.
Right.
It's a, they in fact did the RPG setting Midnight. They actually did an expansion for Runebound that is Midnight Runebound. The only trouble is there are little play issues with it, but we've played it several times and it's fun. It's a good time.
Alrighty, I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.